The Supreme.
Padam.
Situation.
Vaishnava.
Of Lord Vishnu.
Amananti.
They designate.
Tat.
That.
Yat.
Which.
Na iti.
Not this.
Iti.
Thus analyzing.
Atat.
Everything extraneous.
Utsis
rikshava.
Those who are desirous of giving up.
Visrijya.
Rejecting.
Doratmya.
Petty materialism.
Ananya.
Placing nowhere else.
Sohrida.
Their affection.
Hrida.
Within their hearts.
Upaguya.
Embracing him.
Avasita.
Who is captured.
Samahitai.
By those who meditate upon him in trance. Translation. Those who desire to give up all that is not essentially real move systematically by negative discrimination of the extraneous to the supreme position of Lord Vishnu. Giving up petty materialism, they offer their love exclusively to the absolute truth within their hearts and embrace that highest truth in fixed meditation. Could the men just move forward a little, please? Thank you. Purport. The words yanneti netit yatad utsikshrikshava indicate the process of negative discrimination by which one engaged in the search for essential and absolute truth systematically rejects all that is superfluous, superficial, and relative. Throughout the world, people have gradually rejected the ultimate validity of political, social, and even religious truths. But because they lack Krishna consciousness, they remain bewildered and cynical. However, as clearly stated here, Parampadam Vaishnavam Amananti Tat, those who actually desire perfect knowledge must not only reject the non-essential, but must also ultimately understand the essential spiritual reality called Parampadam Vaishnavam, the supreme destination, the abode of Lord Vishnu. Padam indicates both the status and the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which can be understood only by those who give up petty materialism and adopt the position of Ananya Soridam, exclusive love for the Lord. Such exclusive love is not narrow-minded or sectarian, because all living entities, being within the Lord, are automatically served when one directly serves the Supreme Entity. This process of rendering the highest service to the Lord and to all living entities constitutes the science of Krishna consciousness, which is taught throughout Srimad Bhagavatam. paramparam vaishnavam amananti tad, yan neti netit yatad utsis rikshava, visrichiso dauratmiam ananya solida, hridopakuya vasitam samahitai. Those who desire to give up all that is not essentially real move systematically by negative discrimination of the extraneous to the supreme position of Lord Vishnu. Giving up petty materialism, they offer their love exclusively to the absolute truth within their hearts and embrace that highest truth in fixed meditation. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shivati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Neravishesha Shunyavadi Bhastitya Deshatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Brahmanityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakapacharibhya Strakripa Sindhu Vyavaja Paridhanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So this is Brihaspati. Well, actually, it is Shukadev. Actually, it is Sutta. Excuse me. Sutta Goswami explaining to the sages in Naimisharanya forest the instructions that Brihaspati gave Maharaj Janmajaya. You're all probably basically familiar with this story at this point that well, the chapter is titled Maharaj Parikshit Passes Away, and that has just happened. He was finally bitten by Takshaka, the snake bird, and his body burst into flames because of the powerful nature of the poison of Takshaka. And when can we ask the gentleman again to move forward a bit, please? We do have space. Yes, so when that happened, or shortly after that happened, the word spread what had occurred, and the main son of Maharaj Parikshit, Janmajaya, he heard about that. He became extremely, extremely disturbed, very angry that this demoniac snake bird Takshaka, very ghastly creature, had killed his innocent father. He became so angry. Kshatriyas, they have that passionate nature, not so sattvic. Really quite not so sattvic as the Brahmins, even though of course they can become devotees and can become very great devotees, but still generally, particularly in terms of Varnashram and their position in the modes of material nature, they are predominantly in the mode of passion. And of course anyone who's in the mode of passion must also be susceptible to the mode of ignorance. So he became very extremely disturbed and extremely angry, and he decided to get revenge. take revenge. By killing, not only Takshaka, the snake bird responsible for the death of his father, but all the snakes. You know, in a certain sense, one could imagine how he might justify it within his mind. As we know, Srila Prabhupada made the point on a number of occasions that devotees are happy when a snake dies, because snakes are fundamentally, in terms of their material nature, fundamentally envious and just like totally obsessed and possessed by envy, in that they will attack anyone, anything, any other creature, whether they're being attacked and need to defend themselves, whether they are hungry and need to kill some creature to eat or not. They will just deliberately and just completely maliciously attack, unprovoked, unnecessarily, just because they just feel like that. They just like to do that. They're attracted to doing like that. They're driven by their internal natures to do like that. And therefore, even though it's in one sense very unusual idea and perhaps a very unexpected idea, but it is said, and Srila Prabhupada did make the point on a number of occasions, that a Vaishnava is happy when a snake is killed. And even Prabhupada mentioned, it's in the Lilamrita, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was in Mayapur, and he was up on the above ground floor of the house where he was staying, probably at the Chaitanya Mart, because his house is there and it is two-storied. So he was up there above ground and he saw a snake, and he told the devotees, kill the snake. And Srila Prabhupada, it's mentioned there in Lilamrita, Srila Prabhupada was a little surprised, but then later he understood, he heard that a Vaishnava is actually happy when a snake is killed, because the snake is like the embodiment of envy, and is in that way is like, and you could say, an outstanding feature or display of material demoniac character. And as far as we're aware, there's only one other species which may be more prone to do like that, and it's not the wasps, it is the human beings. Hare Krishna. Oh. Okay, anyway, say no more. So no, we're not encouraged to sort of declare war on the human race, but anyway, so perhaps in a certain sense Maharaj Janmajaya, some sort of rationalization could be there. Snakes envious, let's just get rid of the snakes. So, but one way or the other, he decided to just destroy all the snakes in the universe, because the one snake bird, which is a variety of snake, had killed his father in this envious and nasty and unnecessary and unfair way. So that it was to be done via a sacrifice. And the mantras were chanted, which you could say irrevocably, irresistibly attract all snakes into the fire. So snakes from just all over the universe were just coming, flying in to the fire. It must have been a big fire and a powerful fire. And they were just coming in and just being burnt and killed. And Maharaj Janmajaya was happy and he was watching. However, after a little while, he saw that Takshaka, the particular important snake, had not come and was not coming. So he asked the Brahmins, why? What's wrong? And the Brahmins said, well, he is protected by Indra. Two things. He's protected by Indra, and Indra is very powerful. Plus, previously, he took some of the nectar of the demigods. There's a particular type of nectar that is all described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a particular type of celestial nectar available, or which was available at a certain point, which if a person drinks a little of that nectar, then their life expectancy extends dramatically. Dramatically. And the body somehow becomes empowered. The body becomes empowered that the aging process does not work in the same way. And one is protected in that way from what would be one's normal death at the normal time. And one can go on living for hundreds of times longer than the body would normally be able to manage before it just broke down and became incapable of functioning. So Takshaka, he also that came out just a little later. But the Brahmins told him some special mantra. Chant this mantra and it will bring Takshaka and it will bring Indra. And it will bring all the demigods too. So if you're really going to do it, you might as well just... If you're going to overdo it, you might as well really overdo it. So they chanted that mantra and then Takshaka was drawn from the heavenly planets. And Indra and all the demigods were drawn from the heavenly planets by the power of the mantra. And they're all just plunging down towards the fire. And then Brihaspati came and explained that it's not right because he drank the nectar. And plus, of course, the main thing is that one, particularly a devotee, but anyone, but particularly a devotee, should not become envious and angry and vengeful towards others. Because whatever happens in a person's life, it is their karma. And for the devotees, Maharaj Parikshit, of course, was such a great devotee. For the devotees, whatever happens in their lives, it is ordained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that happen. For example, in this case, that Maharaj Parikshit die in this very... Well, by being bitten by this, he's like a super snake. So powerful, this poison was so powerful that it's not just that a person dies after some minutes or half an hour or whatever, something like that. But anybody who was bitten by Takshaka, their body would immediately burst into flame and they would just be burnt to ashes on the spot in a matter of seconds. And we read how previously he had bitten a tree and the tree burnt to ashes. But I think it was Kasyapa was able to counteract that. And was it Kasyapa? I think Kasyapa was able to counteract that. So Takshaka deviated Kasyapa, who was there, bribed him to look the other way, bit Maharaj Kasyapa previously when Takshaka bit the tree and it burnt to ashes. Kasyapa brought it back to life because he knew how. So to avoid him doing that with Maharaj Parikshit, Takshaka bribed him. So anyway, Brihaspati then preached to Maharaj Janmajaya very, very, very nicely about these things, how whatever happens, particularly to a devotee, is the will of the Lord and cannot be inauspicious, really. Somehow or other, in the case of Maharaj Parikshit, the Lord wanted to bring him to him at that time, in that way. He wanted to Maharaj Parikshit to be able to set very amazing examples for other devotees who may be confronted by some extremely challenging and even fatal situation. Actually, initially, when Maharaj Parikshit was cursed by Sringi, the son of Shamaka Rishi, when he was initially cursed, he was not aware. He had left the place, and then Sringi cursed him to die in 7 days by the bite of a snake bird. So immediately, Shamaka Rishi, when he became aware of what had happened, he went to Maharaj Parikshit and explained, "This is the situation. My son has cursed you to die in 7 days. However, I understand it's wrong. He just overreacted. He's just a young emotional boy, not properly trained. He should not have done that. You do not deserve to be cursed like that." So Shamaka Rishi offered, "I will take away the curse. I'll nullify the curse, remove the curse. You just carry on living for the rest of your normal life expectancy and let us do that." But Maharaj Parikshit refused. Maharaj Parikshit refused that, "No, I understand. I know when very extraordinary things like this happen in a person's life, in the life of a devotee, then I know this is the arrangement of Krishna. This is Krishna's arrangement, and a devotee certainly does not want to go against the arrangement of Krishna. So I will accept the curse. You don't need to remove it." And he immediately left home and went to the bank of the Ganges or the Yamuna, and the word spread. So many sages came. Shukadeva Goswami came, and he just heard Srimad Bhagavatam and prepared himself. So then it all came to the climax when Takshaka bit him and he passed away. So Brihaspati explained like that to Janmajaya. And Janmajaya, because he's a devotee, even though he was very deeply affected by this shocking, materially shocking situation, because he was a great devotee, as soon as Brihaspati started explaining to him the Krishna conscious perspective, immediately Janmajaya accepted, yes, you're right. And he stopped the sacrifice. And I don't know what happened to all the other snakes who'd already got burnt up, but anyway, Hare Krishna. But at least for Janmajaya. So Takshaka was not killed, and Janmajaya became fixed again in proper Krishna consciousness and was able to accept what had happened as the mercy of the Lord and just move forward in his service to Krishna as the king. So Brihaspati has been saying that here in this verse is an interesting point, that we're all entangled in material existence. We've all come from material existence. This is our past. As they say, every saint has a past, and every sinner can have a future. So you're all saints, but we all have pasts, material pasts. None of us have really anything to be proud of in that regard. That because of my past, because I was so qualified in the past, therefore, because of my qualification, I was able to accept Krishna consciousness and get into it very nicely, and here I am today in Krishna consciousness because of my past. The fact, of course, is that despite our pasts, despite our probably in many cases really quite shocking pasts, despite all that, because the Lord and his devotees, and particularly Srila Prabhupada, are very merciful, we have received the gift of Krishna consciousness despite everything. So, but here, what is being explained in this particular verse is that a person comes to Krishna consciousness, or comes to Krishna consciousness, spiritual life, and starts looking at these things and seeing and perhaps applying to some degree. So what he's saying here is that generally speaking, when a person reaches that point, because they're very materially conditioned and many habits are there from their material pasts and different attractions are there and repulsions are there, and just one's whole conditioned nature is there, and it's a very powerful thing. So at least in the early stages, the devotee to some degree may or will have to apply this concept mentioned here, directly mentioned actually in the verse, neti neti. Na iti, na iti becomes neti neti. Not that, not this, not something else. So many things, not. So many material things, which generally, according to my material existence, I would be attracted to, I would become attached to, like that. But all these things, I have to say no. I have to learn to say no to all these things. So this is part of the process of Krishna consciousness generally, for all devotees. And therefore we find that Srila Prabhupada, particularly for when devotees came to the point of initiation, that Srila Prabhupada gave as vows that the devotees have to take. First of all, Prabhupada would ask, what are the regulative principles that you're going to follow? Not just what are the regulative principles, but what are the regulative principles you're going to follow? And how many rounds are you going to chant? So not that it's actually the most important thing, but for someone in the very beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, it is important, and even it's so important that Srila Prabhupada made it a just standard part, a standard part of the formula, you could say, for initiation and for beginning in Krishna consciousness. That in order to become nicely situated in Krishna consciousness as quickly as possible, you must avoid these things. Of course, ultimately you must become attracted to Krishna, and it's certainly not a matter of just learning to say no. We have to learn to say yes to Krishna, and that in the long run, that is certainly the main thing. But in the meantime, until our yes to Krishna becomes completely fixed, then sometimes we have to remember, oh yes, I must say no to certain things in certain situations. I can't do this. When we go to the supermarket, we have to look at the list of ingredients and things like this, and sometimes say no. And in our association with other devotees, particularly in this case, in regard to the regulative principles, in the case of devotees of the opposite sex, then we have to be somewhat careful and not let our material propensity to just frivolously interact with everybody, including the opposite sex, but in this case particularly the opposite sex, keep that under control. These things are necessary, otherwise one's Krishna consciousness, one's attachment for Krishna, it'll be more difficult for it to really develop. So this is discussed, actually. It's discussed in Nectar of Devotion. In fact, there's more or less a whole chapter Srila Prabhupada has devoted to this particular point. Saying no and cultivating knowledge in the sense of the shortcomings of material existence and becoming attached to Krishna in the direct sense of cultivating an appreciation for Krishna and focusing on Krishna personally. Which chapter is that? Is it 14? 13? 13 or 14? Maybe. Okay. So around the 13, 14 chapter of Nectar of Devotion, this is discussed. And of course, ultimately the point is that once you become attracted to Krishna, really attracted, and that attraction becomes fixed within the heart, and you're now absorbed in devotional service and really focused on Krishna wholeheartedly, then the nati-nati, not this, not that, the need for any conscious effort like that falls away, because one is attracted to Krishna and one has lost one's attraction, and ultimately even the potential for having an attraction to non-Krishna things. So, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Rupa Goswami there in Nectar of Devotion, they discuss this point that gyan and vairagya, these are the terminologies, gyan in the sense of a philosophical understanding of what is wrong with material life, what is wrong with the conditioned nature, that sort of knowledge and learning in certain ways how to deal with these things, not to eat too much, not to sleep too much, not to associate in certain ways with the opposite sex, or not to associate in certain ways with anybody, not to engage in prajalpa like this, not to be too attached to family affairs, not to be too attached to money and the obsession with material security. So that sort of gyan, that sort of knowledge, it may be helpful. In fact, it's often helpful for the neophyte devotees who have yet to really manifest a substantial positive attraction to Krishna, which then outweighs whatever attraction may be there or may have been there to material things. Yes. But of course the point, that's gyan, and vairagya means that mood of renunciation. There is, in Indian culture or Vedic or quasi-Vedic culture, the idea of smashan vairagya. Smashan vairagya means, vairagya means renunciation, detachment. The renunciation or detachment which arises or may arise at the cremation ground, when your relative, someone close to you, has died, and now the body is cremated and you're there, and particularly, you know, if there's just an open fire and you're just watching, the body of your relative is just turning to ashes in front of your eyes. So it may happen that in such a situation a person may get some realization that, oh, look, this was my relative and we were close and meant so much to me, but actually this is what he has ended up like, as a pile of ashes. That's what I'm going to end up like. That's what we're all going to end up. It's all our lives, our relationships on the material level, everything is going to end like this. So therefore I shouldn't be so attached. This is smashan vairagya. That sometimes people walk away from the cremation ground after the cremation of some person who was close to them feeling like that. Feeling more renounced. I shouldn't be so attached to material life. I should get more serious about my spiritual life. Unfortunately, though, what happens is that in many cases, so many cases, it does not last very long. They walk away from the cremation ground and just go home, and life starts going on as before, and they forget. Even sometimes, you see, on the highway right here, there's some big accident and everybody slows down. And in many cases they're not slowing down because it may be dangerous. There was an accident, you know, something might happen further. They usually slow down so they can look. Is there a dead body or something, how badly smashed were the cars? And then for maybe half a kilometer afterwards, the cars may drive a little slower than usual because it made some impact. But then after a few hundred meters, after a minute or two, then they speed up again. So, little sense of sort of respect for material existence and the dangers of material existence is aroused, but then is swept away again because the material energy is so extremely powerful. So therefore we find Srila Prabhupada in his preaching, he preached so much, you're not this body, you're a spirit soul and you're servants of Krishna. But actually in specific terms he preached a lot that you're not this body. In very specific terms he preached a lot what's wrong with material existence. What's wrong with it just accumulating money? What's wrong with just placing too much emphasis on a comfortable life? What's wrong with not depending on Krishna, but rather just depending on yourself and your material situation? Srila Prabhupada preached this a lot, really a lot. And it's the same idea of neti-neti, to really drive this, instill this in our hearts and minds strongly enough so that in our efforts to cultivate Krishna consciousness, to chant Hare Krishna, render service, study the books, and just absorb ourselves in the life of devotional service, so that unwanted obstacles and unneeded obstacles from our material pasts or just from the material realm will not come and interfere and take our attention and divert our attention back into some material interest. And in that way our focus and our energy in Krishna consciousness and our consciousness is not diverted from our real business. So this is what Brihaspati's been saying, that in this way, giving up petty materialism, after all it is extremely petty, but one has to come to a certain point spiritually before one can see that so clearly, but being able to voluntarily give up petty materialism, then one can offer one's love exclusively to Krishna. In other words, without distraction, with full attention, and with real attachment, chant the holy names, render service to Krishna, in a mood of service, just for his pleasure, for the pleasure of the spiritual master, for the pleasure of the devotees. Then one can wholeheartedly absorb oneself in Krishna consciousness. And then once one has developed a real attachment for Krishna, then the need for all these neti-neti ideas, it falls away naturally because one just becomes completely filled with Krishna consciousness. So therefore we have to preach, and sometimes we have to preach to people to point out what's wrong with material life. Sometimes we have to do that, otherwise they just can't really become situated in Krishna consciousness. And we have to do that with ourselves, and then we can come to the platform of Ananya Sohridam, exclusive love for the Lord. Ananya means no other. Anya means other. Na anya, no other. Sorida, no other affection, no other attraction, no other attachment, but only for Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions, Maharaj? Some words of wisdom, please. Correction. Improvement. Comments or questions, devotees? Srila Prabhupada ki.